From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As the government of Afghanistan collapsed and the country came under Taliban control in August, 70,000 Afghans were evacuated to the United States. Almost 850 of them have come here to Illinois, and that number could expand to 3,000. But not everyone who came here was with their entire family. The U.S. Department of Human Services estimates that 1,300 Afghan children came as unaccompanied minors, no parents, no legal guardians. Some were separated in the desperate last moments at the airport in Kabul or put on a plane while their parents stayed behind. Scores of those children are being housed here in Illinois at shelters run by the Heartland Alliance. And according to a recent ProPublica investigative report by Melissa Sanchez, chaos has erupted in those shelters, with children suffering from the trauma of war, a hasty evacuation, and separation from their families. Joining us now to discuss her reporting is Melissa Sanchez. Melissa, thank you for being with us again today on the 21st.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Listeners, as ever, our lines are open at 800-222-9455. We want to invite you to join our conversation. If you have comments or questions, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. So, Melissa, your reporting focuses on a shelter run by the Heartland Alliance. Maybe we can begin there. What is Heartland Alliance? What do they do?
Sure. The Heartland Alliance is a really large nonprofit in Illinois that does work both here and around the world, humanitarian work, anti-poverty work, work with the homeless. It's a range of activities, and it's divided up into several subsidiaries. And one of those subsidiaries runs, has a contract with the federal government to operate shelters for unaccompanied immigrant children. And I think at the moment, there's four active shelters that they run in the city of Chicago.
So how many Afghan children are in these shelters, and are they all unaccompanied? And what, well, let me start with that question and then we can follow up.
Yeah. So the last time I checked, there was close to 80 Afghan children across the four shelters. Those numbers have changed a little bit. I think that the shelter that I focused that particular report on now has about 20 children. When I wrote about it, there were about 40 Afghan children, but they've been kind of dispersed. Some have been sent to different shelters and some have been released to people who can take care of them, either relatives or family friends. Shelters.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. And just so you know, and all of the children who are in the shelter system anywhere in the country are considered unaccompanied minors. So they might have come with like an older sibling or an aunt or an uncle, but not like a direct parent. And so that's how they're categorized that way.
So what do we know about why they were unaccompanied?
Well, like you said at the outset, like in Kabul, back home, as the Taliban was taking over in some parts, what I've been told by advocates and people who have spoken with the kids is they might have been like on their way to the airport with their family, and then there might have been some sort of checkpoint, and then they were split up. Like maybe some half of the folks in the car were allowed to go and the other folks weren't. At the airports, there was a lot of chaos and a rush to get on the planes, and parents had to make decisions sometimes. Maybe not everybody in the family could go, and a mother or a father might have sent their child without them. I've also heard that not all the planes came directly into the U.S. Some stopped at military bases in other countries like Germany. And I've heard that at these military bases too, there was the same kind of chaos and decisions that had to be made, where sometimes children wound up being separated from their parents there and on a plane here without them.
Wow. So the subtitle of your first piece on this story is "Some Afghan Children at a Chicago Shelter Have Hurt Themselves or Others, Leaving Workers Overwhelmed. Employees say the shelter has never experienced this level of chaos and isn't equipped to provide kids with services they need." What can you tell us about what's going on inside these shelters?
So the first Afghan kids started arriving at the end of August, and in Afghanistan, most people speak either Pashto or Dari. So that's the languages that these kids spoke. Nobody at this shelter spoke those languages. So there was immediately like a little bit of a disconnect between the kids and the staff. And most children who wind up in the country's shelter system are from Latin America, they're from Central America. And so a lot of folks speak Spanish, or they might speak some of the other languages that kids speak, but there was a clear language barrier here. So the language was one key component. Children were fleeing a country that had been at war longer than any of them had been alive. So I can't imagine the trauma and the just the experiences that they had back home, and then this craziness of showing up to a new country without your family and being placed in this system that you don't understand. And it's like really important to just to contrast what these Afghan kids' experiences were with the typical child in a shelter. The typical kid in a shelter is a teen from Central America who knows somebody else who has already come to the US and has gone through this system. And so they kind of know what to expect, that they're going to show up, they're going to be in this place for a couple of months, and then while the paperwork is getting figured out, they're going to get eventually released to a relative. And so for these children, they came without that background, and then there's a language barrier to add on to it, and then there's all that trauma from war and from that departure, that abrupt departure, that all kind of compounded. And what ended up happening is that the kids just they are experiencing a lot of mental health issues, a lot of stress. And so I've heard of a lot of I've seen records and talked to folks inside who there were a lot of children who were self-harming, who were talking about harming themselves, who were harming others, either other children or staff. There was a lot of children who required in hospitalization for their mental health issues. It was somebody referred to it as a mental health crisis, and I think that's exactly right. And so you had the ambulance there sometimes twice a day, constantly picking up kids, either who were trying to break windows, trying to run away, trying to hurt somebody, trying to like cut themselves. And the staff, and kind of on top of everything, you have the staff unable to communicate and de-escalate situations quickly because of that language barrier. I was told that there were a limited number of phones in the building that folks could use to call interpreters, but that takes time, and there wasn't enough phones, and so all of these things kind of just collided, and the staff felt really overwhelmed and unprepared and incapable of caring for the kids they were supposed to care for.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're speaking with Melissa Sanchez, who's a reporter for ProPublica. She has written about unaccompanied Afghan children who've come to the U.S. About 850 of them, or I should say 850 Afghans are in Illinois. That number could grow. But there are about 80 at these shelters that she's been covering, run by the Heartland Alliance. We've been talking about some of the language barriers. There were not people who could speak with the children when they were here. And these children, Melissa, you say, already come in with a lot of trauma. Is that the root issue here? Is it the trauma they're faced with? Is it a lack of resources, not having translators available? And who do we look at? I mean, is this a federal government question? Is this the Heartland Alliance's fault? Like, where is the breakdown in this?
Yeah, I think to start, it's all of those things together. I don't know clinic. I haven't spoken with the children. I'm not a professional, like a licensed clinician, to understand what's going on in each
Fair
individual
enough.
case. But taken together, I think the language, the trauma, this new setting, and then there some of these kids have been there for. Well, when last time I checked, there were multiple kids who'd been there for longer than 70 days, which is just a really long time to be alone by yourself in this country, when you're worried for your folks back home. So there's that. And the responsibility here ultimately falls on the federal government. There's the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement, which runs the nation's shelter system. And when I was doing the reporting for that first story, I was pretty shocked to learn what was happening here at this shelter in the Bronzeville neighborhood. But then I learned that there was a significant number of Afghan kids being taken care of at another shelter in Michigan, in a place called Albion, Michigan. And this was an emergency intake site, and they had Afghan children kind of in this, if you can imagine, like a green setting with like little cottages that are residential, and kids live in each cottage. But almost from day one at this place, they had an interpreter inside each building, an interpreter who spoke either Pashto or Dari. And an immigration lawyer I spoke with who has spent time there, they get to go every day to check on the kids for whatever their legal issues might be. He told me that they were not experiencing the same level of psychological issues that I was describing here in Chicago. And you have to wonder how much of that has to do with the language. And for whatever reason, the federal government was able to provide this service immediately, like right when they opened up. And I don't understand why that didn't happen here in Chicago. So Heartland Alliance, yes, it would have been great if they had Afghan staff, Afghan employees who spoke these languages. But at the end of the day, it's ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which sent those children there.
Do you have a sense of what a day in the life is like for these children in these shelters? Are they learning? Is there school? What is that like?
Yeah, I actually do. We wrote a couple of years ago with some colleagues about what life is like inside those shelters. You might remember in 2018 with the crisis of the kids being separated at the border, there was a lot of attention on the shelters then. So we were able to get a trove of confidential records that kind of painted the life inside. And it's like a regimented life. They live in these little rooms with other kids. They, like, at a certain hour, they all have to wake up and they all have to shower and they all have to breakfast, and they get kind of, you know, taken from room to room to either go to class all day. The class is mostly learning English, but they learn all sorts of things like what the Oscars are and what St. Patrick's Day is. It's kind of like become American here, or like learn a little bit about what it's like to be an American here. There's lunch, there's, I think, weekly or monthly like meetings that they have where there's community meetings where they can voice their opinions to the staff. And I remember when we did that reporting, it was some of it was kind of sweet and comical, and some of it was stressful. Like the kids might complain about being blamed or having to face the consequences of the behavior of other children who are along with them. And there were also things like asking for a different kind of shampoo or asking if they could drink coffee with their food. So the kids I've spoken with who spent time in the shelter, most of them were pretty appreciative because it was a roof over their head. And for some of them who came from really impoverished backgrounds, it was maybe better in some ways than what they had back home. But kind of like the underlying, I think, issue, the stress that I heard from a lot of them is like this desperation to get out. Like they're there and most of them know where they want to go to and have relatives who will take them or know where they could go. A lot of them have to work. I'm not talking about the Afghan kids, but other kids in general. So there's that kind of in the background. I don't know how it might look for the Afghan kids. I know the Heartland Alliance is able to do Friday prayers with the kids. They've been trying to bring in more recently Afghans from the community to help in some way to provide even like a cultural connection to the kids. But I think the large part of their days is spent in class. In the past, they would have these outings, I think like monthly outings for the kids who behaved well, like to the museum or to some outdoor like fun place. But I don't know if those are still happening right now, both with COVID and with this new population.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the things I hear you talking about for the children from, say, Central America, right? They have aunt and uncle who live here or something like that, right? And
mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily the case for these children from Afghanistan. So to the extent you know, what is the end goal for them, right? Are they going to be placed in homes? What are their potential futures?
That's the hard question. And that's kind of the reason I was so concerned when I wrote the story, because the longer kids are there, the more stress and trauma they face. There's a federal long-term foster care program that has historically been very backed up. And I remember when we were reporting a few years ago, there were kids who were on that list for months and months trying to get in. There's a couple of programs of contractors that do this work in Michigan. And so I know they've started to receive some children. But it's going to take a while for those programs to get foster families inside, foster families who are like linguistically or culturally appropriate for these children, to get them through whatever hoops they have to jump, like rightfully so, you know, the background checks they have to be done, the recruitment that has to be done. I think there's going to be a bit of a backlog to get these kids into foster homes that are culturally appropriate. In general, the federal government has been trying to release these children more quickly to people they might have come with or family friends, either like in refugee camps here in the U.S. or just folks in the community who know their families. That process has been expedited a little bit, but there's still a significant number of children who don't have anybody, so for whom that federal long-term foster care program is probably going to be where they wind up.
And we're coming to the end. We need to take a break in about a minute here. But what has the Heartland Alliance said about what it's, how it's dealing with this, what it's trying to do to respond.
Yeah, I mean, so they say they've been trying. They did just get in interpreters in the buildings. This just happened a few days after our stories came out. So they had been trying to work with ORR to make that happen. They say there's a like a significant mental there's a significant barriers to accessing the types of mental health services that they need for the kids. So they're working with local and federal officials to try to get better services. And they say they're trying really hard to place these kids with in safe places and in the meantime take care of them. And they've kind of acknowledged that their workers are frustrated, but that it's heartbreaking work and they're trying to keep the best interests of the kids in mind.
Melissa Sanchez is a reporter with ProPublica. She's been covering the plight of children, Afghan children who came to the United States as unaccompanied minors as a part of the evacuation of that country, and has been following their plight at shelters in the Chicago area. Melissa, thank you so much for sharing your reporting again with us today on the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.